Today is Thursday, and that's the day we read from your letters. Listener Stacy Gold Taylor has heard our conversations with the captain of the LST that has sailed from Greece to Alabama with a crew of World War II veterans. She writes, "My uncle, Lauren Whiting, is the oldest member, I believe, on the crew of the LST. This is more than a bunch of old men trying to recapture the past glory of youth. Each has made noteworthy sacrifices to realize a dream and sense of closure. Had I not some peripheral understanding of the experience, the symbolism and significance might have been lost on me. Thank you for paying tribute to these men and bestowing on them the honor that they and their supporting, admiring, and loving families deserve."
Doug Iliff of Topeka, Kansas, listened to our story on crumbling school buildings in Ohio and wrote to express irritation with what he heard. He says, 20 years ago, as a young emergency room physician, I founded a private school with a group of friends. After several years of insecurity, as we wore out our welcome at a couple of kindly churches, we were able to purchase an abandoned public school building, a beautiful old Tudor structure of 1926 vintage, which had fallen on hard times. Your reporter should visit that building now. Its face is scrubbed, it radiates charm and warmth, and its halls bubble with happy children. We made dozens of major and minor improvements on the building, all supervised by a board of ordinary people from many walks of life. So as I listened to the story, I began to fume. Why did the roof not receive regular maintenance? Why weren't the windows repaired? Why wasn't the boiler replaced? This wasn't a situation calling for courage, as one of the commentators intoned. It is a problem of indolence and inattention. The local school district, which abandoned our building to us, recently went through another spasm of facilities enhancement. They closed a number of old buildings and built new ones. That they were squat and ugly goes without saying. What might be surprising to all but the most jaded observer of the public school process is that the fine arts magnet school lacked a theater or auditorium. This is another perspective on the problem of deteriorating buildings. Thanks for listening.
Ken Williams in Redding, California, wrote to us after listening to David Kestenbaum's report on the electric industry. He says, "I work in the electric industry in California. For some years now, the growth of generation in the western United States has not kept pace with the growth of demand. The folks who keep the lights on in spite of this are, in my opinion, a little like the Wizard of Oz, working furiously behind a curtain. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Thanks for pulling back the curtain for a moment."
But Joe McAndrews in Loveland, Colorado, was one of several listeners to offer a correction to the version of Kestenbaum's story that ran in some parts of the country. He writes, "When demand for power on an electrical grid increases, the turbines do not rotate faster. Instead, a fuel control device, a governor, opens the fuel valve to the turbine to maintain a constant speed. This is commonly 3,600 RPM to generate 60 hertz power."
And James Oliver of Middleville, Michigan, offers another correction in our list of firsts at TWA Airlines. We said that TWA was first to employ an in-flight hostess. Mr. Oliver writes, "I believe listeners would have concluded that TWA started what we now know of as flight attendants. United Airlines has that honor. TWA was one of the companies that chose to use the term hostess. Other companies use the term stewardess. 5 years before TWA employed a hostess, United, in 1930, employed Ellen Church, who is considered by the industry to be the first airline stewardess."
Our email address is atc@npr.org. The street address is Letters All Things Considered, 635 Massachusetts Avenue Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20001. No matter which address you use, please tell us where you're writing from and how you pronounce your name.